Hi, this is Trump administration advisor and son-in-law to the president-elect, Jared Kushner. We have used the transition team's funds to buy the Chapped Trap House podcast and use it to streamline the transition of dad's team. The first thing's out of the way. Chris Christie is out. There's no gabagool. You put Papa in prison. Fuck you. Second of all, Steve Bannon is not antiseptic. Dana, no. Don't know. Don't write that open letter about me again, please. All right. Enjoy the regular scheduled programming.
Hey, everybody. The trap is packed. We got an all-star team on deck for you this episode. Guess what? We're still talking about the election. We're still doing a post-mortem, but we got some friends in the house. We got socialist hunk Matt Karp. What's good?
What's up? Happy to be here. There's a lot of white people here.
I'm descended from Central Asian people. I'm not just a POC. I'm descended from the greatest POC of all time, Genghis Khan. So welcome.
We got brocialist, progressive in chief, Connor Kilpatrick. Connor the Madman Kilpatrick.
What's up, everybody? Happy to be here.
Also speaking to us on the line all the way from Barcelona, Spain, you know who it is already. It's Matt Christman. What's up?
Hi, everybody.
Matt did the purest lib thing possible after the election, which is just flee the country.
He's an expat now.
Matt,
yeah,
how are things?
I couldn't bear to be part of this disgusting United States of America any longer.
Matt, real quick, how is Iceland and now Spain reacting to the Trump presidency?
People are stockpiling salted cod in preparation for the apocalypse.
It's me, Will Moniker, Felix, a.k.a. Jared Kushner, in the house.
I can just easily go out of the voice like this and that, and I can just talk like my normal voice. Or I can Dad, no. Do not put Steve Bannon on a tank and run him through D.C. Not yet. No.
Just like that.
And
it's a great impression.
Rounding it out, now making her debut as a Chapo Trap House co-host, Amber Lee Frost.
Howdy, folks. I prefer co-hostess.
Co-hostess?
Please do not erase.
Cut her mic off, Brendan. Yeah. This is already too much.
You turn that shit off right now.
you guys already know what the deal is. Guess what we're talking about? Like I said, still thinking about the election. How's everyone coping 1 week out? What does your self-care regimen look like? That's what I want to know.
I'm on a lot of Sudafed and Afrin and a little touch of Imodium AD.
All right.
Sounds good. Stay strong, everybody. I think the theme for this week's show is sort of after the great Kurt Eichenwald and his masterpiece in Newsweek this week, entitled The Myths That Cost the Democrats the Election. I think we need to contribute, taking a page from Eichenwald's brilliant piece, and first talk about what are some of the myths that cost Democrats this election and the country, and then from there talk about, genuinely though, what the hell we need to do going forward, or like what role the left should play, or like how do we move forward? What is our response to this grim state of affairs?
Before we dig into this, Eichenwald, another great piece from the greatest journalist of all time and the greatest magazine of all time, Newsweek. Content warning, according to market research, 75% of your grandparents died because they fell out of a guard tower in Eichenwald. Actually, we're going to be saying his name a lot. So
is it Eichenwald?
German isn't a language. It's Eichenwald. Okay. That's how it's spelled.
I think a good way to start is actually just reading from the opening of Kurt Eichenwald's piece on the myths that cost Democrats the election. I'm just going to start here. On Friday, I almost assaulted a fan of my work.
I have a problem.
Same.
What a great way to start.
I was in the Philadelphia International Airport, and a man who recognized me from one of my appearances on television news show approached. I like that he recognized Kurt from his appearances on television and not his Twitter, Abby, because if that were the case, there's no way anyone would have recognized him in public.
Yeah, Kurt has been doing like the greatest MySpace angles since 2007. He's catfishing. Dude, he's catfishing everybody. Listeners right now, you should...
Yeah, he has the most disappointed Tinder dates in the world.
Yeah. Kurt Eichenwald in his Twitter, Abby, looks like a courageous journalist in a TNT movie, but in person, he looks like a beluga.
Check out... His wiki doesn't lie.
Yeah.
No. He looks like a beluga with a 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah.
But no, he says he encountered this fan at the airport in Philadelphia. He thanked me for the investigative reporting I had done about Donald Trump before the election, expressed his outrage that the Republican nominee had won, and then told me quite gruffly, "Get back to work." Something about his arrogance struck me, so I asked, "Who did you vote for?" He replied, "Well, Stein, but..." I interrupted him and said, "You're lucky it's illegal for me to punch you in the face." Then after telling him to have sex with himself, but in a much cruder term, I turned and walked away.
Oh, this is so good.
Fucking liberals.
There is no way the story is true. Like, what did Jill Stein
never
actually
happened.
Get?
This is how many? The, how, what percent?
Fucking
category.
18 people voted for Jill Stein. Yeah. 18?
More people wrote in Bernie Sanders in Vermont than voted Jill Stein.
The only people that voted for Jill Stein were fucking like Arrowhead.com mods. Like confused people who thought that Baraka was Baraka from Street Fighter. It was gamers. She got a lot of gamers.
Yeah, I'm giving Kurt here the Rod Dreher Award for passing along personal anecdotes that very clearly... on just first blush, did not happen in any way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
Guy
not.
Is a hard-boiled, crusading journalist of the Ernie Pyle variety. You know, he just calls it like he sees it. He's not afraid to throw down. He's a sort of Hemingway-esque figure. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Yeah.
More like Kurt... Ernie Pyles.
Yeah, Kurt Eichenwald just travels from airport to airport wearing a like little fedora that says press on it. He's like, "Who did you vote for, you son of a bitch?" And they're... I wrote in, class is more important than race. How dare you, sir? Didn't happen.
The Battle of the Bulge of 2016 liberalism. Yes, that's it.
I just like that he encountered this gruff man at the airport who was like, "Get back to work." "Who did you vote for, sir?" "Jill Stein."
He met Mickey from Rocky. And he's like, "You're a bum, Rocky. Jill Stein is the only choice to get the chemtrails out of the sky."
Outside of that that airport encounter that where Kurt both managed to meet someone who proves his point and gave him a chance to show how tough he is, which happens to me all the time. let's talk about the actual myths Kurt says that Democrats, the myths that they believe that cost him the election. And the first one he talks about is that the DNC is some kind of almighty institution that put their thumb on the scale for Hillary and robbed Bernie of a fair shot of winning the election, or at least taking a fair shot of competing in the primary. So I don't know. Where do you guys want to go with this? How would you respond to that, Connor?
I think, Matt, this is a good question. You would know, like, who handles like the endorsements and all that? That wasn't really the DNC.
Yeah, dude, I don't. It's the DNC thing is, I think, blown up by too many sort of conspiracy minded people on the left. I mean, obviously, the DNC wanted Hillary to win. Every prominent Democrat in Washington wanted Hillary to win. They all endorsed her months before the election happened. The issue about putting thumbs on scales isn't necessarily about manipulating debates or, you know, using media contacts to, like, you know, put Bernie Sanders out to sea. Although, of course, they did all that shit. The issue is every single organized member of the Democratic Party was crusading for Hillary, was organizing sort of state legislative councils in all the states, like, months and months in advance. All these, you know, these people who, you know, may not pull a lot of water nationally, but, you know, they can help move votes in a lot of states. Hundreds and hundreds, I think over 1,000 state legislators endorsed Clinton. And I mean, it's crazy to say that the Democratic Party wasn't, this is really unprecedented, basically, I think, as far as I know, in terms of the early unanimous, consolidated, backing of a single candidate. And I think Obama's part of it. I mean, he obviously cleared the field for her too.
Yeah, I mean, how many congressmen did Bernie pull in the entire primary? It was just, you would know, this was like something like three. I mean, that's insane. I mean, think of how well Obama was doing with endorsements when he was polling in the like the teens. Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, so it's like you don't need to go to the DNC, but.
But Bill, they do have some.
Yeah, but
I mean,
Obama
he does
didn't
have
own
some
slaves. You're forgetting.
Bill, goddamn yeah. Richardson had more endorsements.
But he does have some point that the Democratic Party clearly doesn't have the power that any of us thought it would. If they only have the power to shoot themselves in the dick,
right?
Yeah. They're good
to
at that.
Go
though.
Have sex with themselves.
But in a weird way, that's what's kind of like terrifying, at least for me, is that like. I thought that, you know, shitty people would come save us, but even shitty people aren't coming to save us.
They
you know?
Don't want to, and we've now learned they can't.
Oh, they can't, yeah. It's amazing.
Shitty people had, like, a more complete plan just around, like, putting their finger on the scale and, like, getting these votes out there and fucking Sanders in, like, weird ways than they did in the election. Like, their entire plan in the election was like, well, we did it.
Their electoral plan was beat Bernie.
It was beat Bernie. And their entire electoral plan was like, well, we did it. Hillary can disappear for 2 months while she talks to Count Chocula and raises $1 billion. And dude, don't worry. We have this really clever 13-year-old whose name is Robbie Mook. And he has a computer algorithm that actually tells him that if we buy $10 billion worth of ads in Los Angeles, we're going to win Nebraska's second congressional.
What are the odds Robbie Mook and Harry Enten are the same person?
They are, yeah. Yeah. Forecaster Mook. I like how Robbie...
Forecaster Enten, I didn't refer to him by his full name.
Do you think Robbie Mook is fucked because Forecaster Enten has it? I like how Robbie Mook's name is just like an insult from The Sopranos.
it's an insult from Mean Streets.
Yeah.
This guy's a Robbie Mook. Get him out of here. But, I mean, like, back to this idea of, okay, so in the Democratic primary, I guess it wasn't stolen from Bernie. I mean, everyone was playing by the same rules, even though the rules heavily favored Clinton, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
She got about 3 million more votes than him in the primary, right?
Right.
If the Democratic primary was run in a way that was more open in a lot of states, like, I thought if New York State had an open primary, Bernie would have won the New York Democratic primary.
Yeah, I think there was a stat that New York had the second lowest primary turnout in the whole season after Louisiana, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's all you need to know.
And friend of the show, James Adomian, made this point today on Twitter where he just basically said a primary process that brings in more people outside the Democratic Party will... de facto, it will make people in the general election more engaged, right? Instead of putting up all these hurdles to participation from people who are just now getting interested in politics or are thinking about it for the first time. If you get them interested in participating early, they'll be more likely to turn out later, right?
That's exactly what happened with Obama in 2008. Like, if you want to explain a lot of his youth turnout, there are people who started getting involved with him in the primaries, you know, and... You know, I'm not saying it would be impossible for Hillary Clinton to get people involved, but her entire way of like getting involved in the primaries was like they were going to hire you for HillaryClinton.com to write like the Hillary Clinton is my abuela. She wears it. She wears a dashiki.
That was their entire Latino outreach,
yeah.
Right?
They fucking spent $300,000 on Latino outreach and $1 million to fight the trolls. They spent $1 million on Correct the Record.
Yeah.
Now, did you guys see the news? Sam Stein at Huffington Post, I think, had this story today that said that the Michigan office had to use $300,000 of their own money to hire canvassers in the last weeks of the election because the campaign in Brooklyn, where it was being run out of, just didn't respond to them or ignored them.
There's a great element at the end there where they said that apparently the thinking was that they were going to trick Trump into not campaigning in Michigan.
Oh, my
not
God.
Campaigning in Michigan. Like some real House of Tards shit.
Dude, they were literally...
They were going to, see 11th dimensional chess. And of course, you know, they ended up checkmating their own.
Yeah, but he's playing dodgeball. He's not playing chess.
Dude, they were literally trying to do fucking pickup artist shit to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
The last you got to know person, about hypnosis?
The last person on earth you should try that on. Like, he knows, folks. I've been keenoing my entire life. Yeah,
yeah. Got a major IOI in Wisconsin. So
they were reading Scott Adams' blog, and they're like, this is how we're going to beat Trump.
If Scott Adams did win the election for Trump because he gaslit all the feeble-minded Clinton executives to do this.
Meanwhile, all of Trump's strong alpha supporters are going to the polls with sex and period juice all over them. Sorry, hard segue from that line, but from...
What?
Fuck yes!
Whoa! Whoa. Oh, just came through.
A strange thing happened when three lads decided to make a podcast.
But instead of asking me about my documentaries, they asked why my man shirt's so tight. Look at him, he laughing.
I want to hear Def Jam Adam Curtis.
No, keep it in. Keep it in. No edits. No edits is how we roll.
Get the fans excited.
All right, so back to these myths that Kurt is talking about. On to the second myth.
Oh, this is the best stuff. The Bernie
second
stuff?
Myth is the idea, in Kurt's the idea that Bernie would have won the election, okay? And Kurt's example, I mean...
Wait a minute. That myth cost her the election? The thing you couldn't think of until she lost it cost her the election.
Yeah.
This myth like transcends space and time.
It's quite amazing.
How can a myth that could only be born after the election affect the result of the election?
Yeah, Kurt actually like he saw that like he saw space time breaking down. Kurt is actually the star of a new show on ShareBlue TV. It's called Quantum Creep.
But okay, so
such a travesty. I mean, it's such a travesty. Sorry, I've just Connor just showed me this thing. I'm just skimming it. It's outrageous. The section calling him a communist with connections to Castro alone would have cost him Florida. Hillary Clinton lost Florida. Sorry. I also like, isn't one of them that like in his 20s he was a ne'er-do-well who couldn't pay bills? So I mean, okay,
yet
guess,
again, the yeah. Democratic Party not getting what people like about other people.
I know, it's amazing.
They're like,
Jesus
oh, Trump
Christ.
Is vulgar. Have you been to America? We love vulgar. Bernie is a fucking slacker loser. Yeah, those are our favorite people.
Dude, Bernie was an irony boy when he was like 20. Like if they had. Dude, you know
he was in Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, he did his own version of Cumtown when he was like 20 and poor.
He totally did.
No, but you said Bernie,
yeah, and every single one of them was something that was brought up by the Clinton campaign and got no attention because nobody gave a shit.
Especially the one about
this guy who wrote 500 articles in the months leading up to the election about how you know Trump didn't pay, you know he like didn't tip his Grubhub delivery man or whatever, and was 100% convinced that every one of them was going to be the end of Trump's campaign, and then he won. Shouldn't that tell me
yeah.
fucking OPO doesn't mean anything in an election where a guy can be on the fucking tape talking about grabbing pussies and still get elected? You really think some shit about the Sandinistas is going to move the needle in that way?
Well, it's pettier than that. Like, one of them's like he stole electricity from
utilities.
So it's
yo,
like
that is a dirtbag.
I know.
I respect
like,
that shit.
I do want to point out. I grew up upper middle class. My dad worked at the racism store. He owned the racism store. My mom stole cable from the time she was pregnant with me in 1990 to our when our house burned down in 1994. And like we descended from Jewish racism merchants in Venice. So it's like a broadly left thing.
Now, you jumped ahead, but like Kurt's big thing that about like his big knock on the idea that Bernie would have won the election is that there's this huge Oppo file on Bernie that never got played. He said it was the Republican Oppo research that I saw. Which to me, this is like the airport incident.
This is totally the airport incident.
Like a Kurt Eichenwald who like you said, like made himself into like the anti-Trump reporter. What, Rince Priebus, Rince Penis or whatever, was just like, here, Kurt, look at our Oppo file on Bernie Sanders.
He has here in his hand a list of the time Bernie Sanders stole HBO so his kid could watch Fraggle Rock in 1985.
And let us not forget.
It was Jeb Bush who was like, Kurt, I don't want Trump to win. You have to stop Sanders. I'm showing you the file. I can show you the file because my wife is at the chiropractor's.
Remember when David Brock said
the best one to me is that he stole utilities when he was in his 20s.
I love that.
That's awesome. Okay, just yesterday, I was on Street Fight. I subbed for Brett on Street Fight, and I was talking to Brian Quimby, Murder Brian, about this, our Ohio correspondent. And I maintain that if Bernie had been the nominee and it had come out that he stole utilities as a young man, Ohio and much of the upper Midwest would have been a lock for him.
Yeah.
He would have won
the entire Great Lakes by like 20 points.
He would have won the Kasich vote.
Easily. Yeah.
Every hobo across the Eastern Seaboard plus the entire Midwest.
Isn't it ironic that that's actually the only thing that could have made Al Giordano vote for him?
I mean, how many millennials are probably like cheering on Bernie with stolen Wi-Fi?
I mean,
they immediately relate to that.
Absolutely.
True fact, Abraham Lincoln carried Indiana because he spent most of his 20s taking sheep's milk from a neighboring farm growing up. I mean, this is in the American grain, people.
Hoosiers love that shit, too.
There's a huge Oppo file on Bernie Sanders that was just, as soon as let's say in this nightmare scenario, he won the Democratic primary, just from day one, the Republicans would be like, he's a Muslim. He's not born in America. Oh, wait, no, wait, they did that already. The guy who won the presidency quite convincingly twice.
The guy who like came into office with supermajorities in the House and stuff.
Kurt's literally like his big winner in the second half of the thing is, you know, he's got, you know, Daniel Ortega or someone saying, goddamn Yankees. Like, it's literally the exact same thing. That there's video footage of Bernie being at an event where someone is saying, goddamn Yankee. It's like literally the exact same fucking thing as
the Jeremiah Wright tape.
And Barack Obama was a black man, by the way.
Yeah.
A black man in a deeply racist country. And okay, anyway.
No, you had a great point about that in one of your articles, Matt, about how by the time the general election rolls around, most people know a candidate, and when a candidate has high name recognition, it's really hard to change people's perception of a candidate. So that's why that stuff didn't work on Obama, because by the time McCain was deploying it, everybody knew they liked the guy. I mean, my Republican dad voted for Obama. I mean, people liked him, so it didn't have much damage. You know, by the time, would you say by spring? I mean, didn't most of America know who Bernie was and have an opinion of him?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He had huge. It was people were like, oh, he's a Democratic John Kasich or some ridiculous thing. But no one knew who John Kasich was except Felix, who followed him to every campaign event. But
he rode the rails with him.
Yeah,
I took an hour of trains to Bay Ridge just to watch Kasich with Montel.
I wasn't even writing about it. I just like wanted to
You're
see
just
it.
A fan.
Yeah, I was just a fan of his.
Bernie was like a well established. Like, he was by far the third most well known, and by far the first most popular candidate of anybody. And yeah, I mean, look, would he have taken hits? Would it have been a ginormous easy cakewalk blowout without any ups and downs? That's not how politics works. Of course things would have gotten ugly and dirty, and you know, there are a lot of, you know, right-wing Republicans in this country, but would Bernie have won? Yes.
Bernie would have won. We have to keep saying it.
Yeah, Will, you made a great point.
I'm getting a tattooed over my tits. Bernie would have won.
It really is actually important to like say that, just because, I mean, there's going to be a lot of and there already is a lot of bullshit trying to like obscure the clear fact of what politics actually cut through.
Well,
right?
Like, I think, Connor, I think the point is, like, look, these historical counterfactuals, they're subjective. Who knows? I think we can make a very good case that the states that Hillary lost, especially in the upper Midwest,
hell yeah, Rust
Sanders,
Belt.
Sanders would have won. Yeah. And it's hard for me to imagine states that she won that he would have lost. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think, Connor, you said it at best, that like, it's important that we talk about this, because the analysis we use for why Donald Trump won this election will define our response to him going forward.
Right. That's just basic politics. It's your analysis of what happened by definition, dictates your prescription for how to fix it. You know, and but so that's why it's really important that we get the analysis correct, because we want to know how to beat them.
I think part of that analysis is if we really want to get into like the myths that I honestly think should be confronted if you are a Democrat or a liberal. I think some people get it now. Like, this is a rock bottom moment of clarity position a lot of people find themselves in. A lot of people don't, though, and a lot of people are doubling down on the same bullshit. And my attitude to that is, like, if you really believed in Hillary Clinton, if you really, really wanted her to be president, you like, not just that you didn't want Donald Trump to be president, but you really, really wanted Hillary to be president, you should be more angry at her than I am. Or that we are. You should be furious at her because she sold you down the river.
She couldn't even face you.
Absolutely.
She couldn't even fucking face you after you lost. She has no respect for you. She's like just out walking her dog in between her hilarious comedy routine of fainting.
She's actually at a celebrity gala tonight for the Children's Defense League or what I forgot what it's called in her honor. She's at a gala tonight. So Bernie was this morning outside the White House. Right now. I mean, like, that's all you need to.
If you'd like to read more about Hillary Clinton's record in terms of children's welfare, you can pick up False Choices, where I contributed to. It's a left feminist critique of Hillary Clinton. It's going to be more relevant now than ever.
I think one thing about the Children's Defense Fund, which Hillary is fundraising for, it's not a fund to get children medicine. It's actually the Junior League of the Israeli Defense Force. Just buying them tiny little airplanes.
Can we say one thing, that this election is a repudiation of gala liberalism? Not gay liberalism. I love gay liberalism. Gala liberalism. That is Hillary Clinton in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I think the best analogy, especially, I pointed out on Twitter, like, you know, she hasn't tweet. I know this is sounds ridiculous to say, but she hasn't tweeted anything since like the 9th of November. I mean, she's just basically, because her whole project was her run for president, you know, so that's over. So politics for her is effectively over.
Well, Connor, you have to give her time to mourn.
That's what
everyone
said to me.
As a woman,
it's amazing.
We're very hysterical, and we can't really do politics without crying a whole lot.
How are they not so mad at her? How are they? It blows my mind. I mean,
hold on. What she has to really do is she needs to have time to forgive us for letting her.
Yeah.
No. We're seeing a lot of this. Yeah. Like, dude. And Felix, what you said in our last episode is, like, she's not a leader. She has fans.
Yeah.
She has fans, not supporters. She wants to lead, like, and form a political.
She's
culture.
A celebrity for people who had unpaid internships.
Exactly. You know what this week reminded me of? It reminds me of when Justin Bieber got a DUI, and all these girls were like, "How does it feel when people take your hero and criticize him, call him a monster, laugh at his pain?"
But at least they're 14 and horny. Yeah, exactly. They can be forgiven because they're blind with horniness. No one is blind with horniness for Hillary.
Peter.
I don't think. Well, Peter is. Yeah.
And it's not that just that she failed. Her failure has unleashed Donald fucking Trump on us. How are people not furious at her? It's like she's like a cult. She's a cult for, like, affluent professionals. I mean, she's like the Baba Vakian of liberalism. It's really amazing.
Professional managerial classes, Baba Vakian.
She really is. It blows my mind.
You guys, okay, I want to see, I might be the only guy who's, like, into internet bullshit enough to remember this, but does anyone remember Hillary's44.com?
No.
No.
Okay. Hell yeah.
Matt remembers. Hell yeah.
Coming
hell yeah,
to
Matt.
Save.
Hillary's44.com was this like psychotic web forum for Pumas, which Party Unity my ass. Like the Hillary Clinton.
Back in 08 when
back
she lost
08,
the primary
right.
to Obama.
To Barack Obama.
Yeah.
To an uppity candidate. Right. Michelle.
And they like this
to an unqualified black man. Remember that?
And all the posts,
I'm serious.
All the
there was this crazy lady. She's like a 70-year-old lady at some party deal. And she came out of the room after they voted for Obama, screaming at the press, going, "They're taking it from Hillary to give it to an unqualified black man."
"And kill me now. Go on, go into the ham and take the carving knife and stab me here, now, please. It would hurt me less than what you just said."
"You know, I know seniors that are inspired."
Yeah, she was reading from Kurt's Oppo file on Obama, by the way.
So Hillary's 44. It was
still up,
right? Yeah. Still up. They're actually
enter it into your web browser.
They're
while you listen.
They're pro Trump now, but like they had the best posts ever. Like all the posts were like, Barack Obama is going to bring out that horrible man, Jay, talking about Jay-Z, to call Hillary Clinton a bitch, and he's not going to pull up his pants. And it was just like psychotic conspiracy theories. One of them was a DLC lawyer who used a company credit card to buy an account on cumfiesta.com. And I used to...
Is that site still up, by the way?
That's Latino Outreach.
But... I first noticed this, I was like 18 when I was following this, and I was like, wow, like, Hillary certainly hits a nerve in a certain type of person. And if you're like, if you're someone who's had 5 unpaid internships, or you have a company, you call your HR department to complain that your company car is fucked up, like that type of thing. You, like, Hillary is your god. She's Zoroaster. She's the Mahdi. And she can only be failed. It's an insane cult of personality for such a, just like, you know, look at Hillary Clinton's statements through the campaign about the pipeline, about, you know, protests, where she's like,
no, but
just the most both sides.
But they respect that. That only earns greater respect because she's somebody who, like, sort of understands the complexities of, you know, a difficult world. I'm doing a little teaser. I'm doing a thing for Jacobin. If you look at the numbers, so, okay, the myth of, you know, Hillary's, you know, the Schumer strategy of we're going to trade a vote, a blue-collar vote for a moderate Republican, that bullshit. Okay, obviously that was an utter epic fail. But it's wrong to say that Clinton didn't get out the vote in, like, rich suburban districts, because she killed it in Darien, Connecticut. She slaughtered Westchester. She ruled the Upper East Side, and she owned Montgomery County, Maryland. She
won Orange County for the first time since 1936, I believe.
Yeah, Orange County, California. Exactly. Yeah. And she crushed Barack Obama in Marin.
You mentioned Upper East Side. Yeah. Upper East Side is the only red slice of Manhattan the last two elections. So she got those Republican votes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she got, like, basically, like, really rich blue state, professional class, sort of moderate to liberal people to either to turn out because they love her so much and they hate Trump. I mean, that is part of it. Or to go to her. And it's striking that's the trade that she made. I mean, that's how she won the popular vote. That's why her numbers with white voters were actually pretty consistent with Obama's, because she lost a lot of, you know, working class white voters, and she won a lot of, you know, rich white voters.
If this were the Pee Wee Herman show right now, we'd be screaming because you said the magic words. The magic words of the week are WWC.
Oh, yeah.
can we talk about WWC? For a second, because this is the Pee Wee Herman siren. I'm bringing this up because I'm actually bewildered. Like, I don't know what to make of all of this. Like, that we're seeing a lot, like, in post-election, especially talking about this question of should we have gone with Bernie or not, and many of Bernie's statements after the election. Like, Connor, like you said, he's been in the media all week out there, and he's saying things along the lines of, like, we need to do better with, like, the middle and working class. Did he say white working class specifically?
I think one of his Twitter feed that's not him, that's like his campaign staff, maybe he said something. He said something a little, I'm not sure I would have said it, but it was like, I come from the white working class. It's a shame we can't win, but my people. Which is, that was...
We need to allow the white working class to say the N-word.
It's just a word, folks.
Yeah, it's been bizarre to watch this.
Okay, but, like, we're now dealing with this idea that the Trump voter, or the people who actually more accurately just didn't vote for Clinton or anyone. Yeah,
exactly. That's such a fucking fake bullshit. It's just thing. Like, and they all want to make it about Trump voters. Fuck Trump voters. He got about the same votes as Mitt Romney.
Yeah, absolutely.
That the idea that those are the people who need to be focused on is just, nobody is saying that other than the people who want
to
be.
No, they're saying that you have to focus on working class people.
You want
to
ratify racism. Cool.
Right. Right. The key word is not fucking white. The key word is working class.
And the fact that they missed the white working class means they didn't talk about class. It means they talked about other identities without talking about class. And I don't even like the idea of talking about class as an identity, since it's a material position or whatever. But if they had talked about, you know, class as an identity, I would have in fact not believed they were coming into this in bad faith. You know, they talk about intersectionality. Right. What about poverty, for fuck's sake?
I want to say one thing. A little disclaimer, a little sympathy for the devil. I don't think... Okay, the liberal pundits, total bad faith, I agree, and we'll smash them in a minute. I think... Look, in the immediate aftermath of Trump's victory, which among many other things, it was absolutely, as I think, you know, you guys said last week, it was absolutely a victory for white supremacy in this country. Like, no question. Everything, I think, as Matt has said, you know, everything we do in this country is bathed in white supremacy. So, like, look, that's obviously part of the equation. Maybe the most important part, even. Whatever. Look, that's true. But I think, and in the aftermath of that, I think there is, I think, Connor and maybe me disagree, I think there's some people, again, not these pundits, but... There are some people who might think, okay, is the Democratic Party going to make a Bill Clinton type move again?
Yes.
Is the Democratic Party going to do a thing where it's like, oh, like Jim Webb or Joe Manchin or some shitbag like that is going to do a thing where it's like, we need a rural poverty plan for Brian Urlacher type American and not for Randy Moss type American. We need a lunch pail, you know,
the Bubba campaign.
A lunch pail America plan. Right. Yeah.
Matt, this is a good point. And okay, I'll name him. Okay, Jamel Bowie is basically who I'm talking about here. I'm utterly perplexed by a lot of his reaction to this, but he's having
an accident.
But like
to
give him his due, right? As best I can like interpret his argument is that like the Trump victory has put white supremacy front and center in American politics in a way that it hasn't been in a long time, and for people like us or pundits to sort of like negotiate or hem and haw about how do we win over the working class or the Trump voter is to ignore the people that are actively imperiled by.
I want to know. I want names. Who's talking about winning over Trump voters right now?
Yeah, nobody is.
Everyone's talking about the fact that this was a loss for Clinton because her vote share among whites and, we should point out, minorities collapsed.
But Matt, you're talking about
Obama.
People who didn't vote.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the people who
right.
didn't show up.
But
that's the people who determine this election.
But
who
but
the
like,
fuck is
almost,
who are they talking about?
I don't know.
I'm asked. You guys have read all this stuff. Who are they responding to specifically?
I don't know, and I'm perplexed by it.
Is it just made up?
To give Jamel his due for a second, I fear that like if the Democratic Party isn't ruthlessly purged of these Clintonite hacks and these DLC people, then I could very well see their response to a Trump administration being, well, we need to run a more law and order Democrats. Or Matt, like you were saying, like, you know.
Especially since Hillary fucking ran that campaign in 2008, which everyone forgot for some reason.
I think Will was saying that, like, there would be, I mean, the Democrats would learn from this in their infinite wisdom, is that they would rather revive the Dixiecrat
right.
model.
They'd rather be like, okay, let's junk affirmative action. What are the other things? Let's talk about like shitty rappers more. Like, let's do the
they
Bill
would
Clinton
absolutely
move.
Like
parental
yeah.
advisory stickers
before going right. to issues of class. They would absolutely revive
right.
Dixiecrat racism.
And that's like yeah. I do think that's still a legit fear with your Manchins and your Webs and so on. And so that needs to be opposed. And look, let's just say for the record, I don't speak for Jackman Magazine. I don't speak for Chop. I don't really speak for anyone. But we'll smash that if that comes up. I'm
yeah.
just the bad
happily
faith move.
Destroy it happily.
The handsome Vanguard says we're gonna smash it. It's gonna be fun.
That's
yeah, you
bullshit.
Trying to smash, fam?
Yeah. Oh, always. But look, the bad faith move. And now I'm gonna give it over to Connor. But the bad faith move is when these people frame it as if it's the labor left, the Bernie Sanders left, the Keith Ellison for Christ's sakes left that is actually wanting to make this move. That is like urging the Democrats or you know, some broader left formation to make
go
this move.
Right,
and that's
right.
And that's insane.
Also,
that's
the labor
not what
left is not like white, for fuck's sake.
Right. I mean, that's one thing that's important to remember. This presumes that Joe Manchin is really good on all of our class first, socialist Bernie issues. He's not. Neither is Jim Webb. Jim Webb came out against Employee Free Choice Act. So they're making a false dichotomy here that doesn't exist. I mean, you're right. They would sooner revive the Dixiecrat model. It's not like. There's no candidate out there who's pro-labor and really good on these issues, but is a little problematic. That doesn't exist. Right now,
is all of this like this vertigo of like just going round and around and around on these issues of like race and populism? Does it just come out of the phrase white working class? Should we just say working class that like the
yeah.
Democrats
well,
and
I
the
think
left?
The reason people were trying to talk about Rust Belt too because they were trying to localize it in terms
right,
of stuff.
Of the, yeah.
But also like you know, you talk about the Rust Belt, you're also talking about like auto manufacturing, you know, Lily White.
Yeah.
You know, like that's also not entirely white. But I think actually it does demographically make sense to talk about white working class people, not as a target, but as a canary in the coal mine. Because literally the only thing they have in terms of, and I hate this language, but privilege, you know, in the absence of that is class. And so it's like you're not reaching out to people on the basis of class. Like that, the fact that you're not getting them, because I don't believe working class people are irrational. I don't believe that, you know, even like whatever, a light smattering of racism makes someone so irrational that they are willing to fuck themselves over for the very, you know, like crude and vicious mission of white supremacy. They, you know, they have self-interest.
Well, Amber, right. You made a great point that, like, all this micro-targeting of demographics, like, that's Democrat shit.
That's Democrat shit. Like, talking about the working class.
Right, they're like, well, I want to get soccer moms. Connor Kilpatrick wants to get racist white working class people. Well, you know, like, it's like they can't even conceive of what we're actually talking about. And you know, but one reason this whole discourse of white working class comes up is because it is true that the Democratic Party, you know, 1976, Jimmy Carter won white workers north and south. And this was at the height of the busing riots, okay? Mm-hmm. Then Reagan won the white working class. So after that, though, white workers start doing things like defecting to the Republican Party, but most either stop voting or they keep voting for the Democratic Party, but a ton just stop voting. So they drop out of the electoral process. So I think that's where all this stuff comes from. But see, you know,
also
a liberal,
though, there was no massive, that's a little overestimated, there was no massive migration of like Democrats
to the Republicans.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, it was small, but this is the thing. This is liberal ideology. So they see that, and what do? They say, boom, in 1980, Reagan ran as a racist, and the white workers all became racist all of a sudden.
I'm not a fan of his, immiserating economics plans that will further, you know, impoverish me. But I am a fan of his racism. Like, that's not what they were thinking.
I think a lot of this stems from liberalism's inability to act. I think this is the core right here. What they cannot face is that the Democratic Party is actually a really shitty workers' party.
Yes.
And so what they'd rather do is they'd like, oh, this thing's happening. All these white people are just dropping out. They'd rather think, well, it's clearly because they're racist.
Connor, here's the thing. I think what they don't get is that for like these people who are fans, right, or people who are really committed to the Democratic Party or really committed liberals, I think that they hear like when we say the Democrats really need to like focus on class and economics if they even want to sniff at power again. And they think, well, it must be something else because we're already doing that. They think it's self-evident that Hillary Clinton does
represent.
They
do, because they're like, what? We gave you Lena Dunham? Isn't that what you people want?
Yeah. No, it's crazy. I mean, I've had people, you know, DM me about this or whatever. It's like, but what else could they have put in the platform? It's like Hillary Clinton did not campaign on her goddamn platform.
She wouldn't even go for a $15 an hour minimum wage.
Okay, so for one thing, there's the compromises and the shit eating that happened in the platform. But even, look, Amber, I mean, look, even if she'd campaigned about a $12.50 minimum wage and she'd said that in every goddamn speech or any speech, then, you know,
she would have
a better case.
Discussion of wage altogether.
She doesn't talk about that.
I mean, the big thing that people say, like, when they argue about this, like, that I've noticed is, she had the most progressive platform of all time. Well, it's like, even if that was true, it doesn't fucking matter, because all she did at almost every campaign appearance and absolutely every single ad and every debate was, Donald was mean to John McCain.
Yeah.
Dude, she didn't run as a candidate with this progressive platform. She ran as like the sensible choice.
You can't run again. You have to give people something to vote for. The only thing she gave people something to vote against.
And this gets back to something I wanted to say earlier, but it's perfect what we're talking about now, is that, like, you know, my problem with Hillary Clinton isn't really that she's a party hack. The problem, I mean, if the Democratic Party still had a significant labor, you know, constituency, a party hack would be fine. Like, Hubert Humphrey was a party hack, but Hubert Humphrey was, compared to Clinton, was fucking great. I mean, he's pro-civil rights. He was a quasi-social democrat, believed in, like, centralized planning. So he was a party hack in 1968. The Democratic Party of 2016, I'm sorry to say, is not the Democratic Party of 1968. So a party hack won't cut it. You need someone like Sanders, who is the opposite. That's the thing. Like, so I don't want to get too much on that she's a hack. It's because she's a, you know, if this, we would love an 1860 Republican hack, right? Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about something, and Matt Chrisman, this is a great point that you've made before that I think is even more germane now. It involves this whole language that we're like, it's all in the terms of reaching out or empathizing with
empathy.
People that hold otherwise.
That's the thing. They keep saying, oh, you want me to empathize with racists? Sorry. And I finally realized why they kept that tick, even though I never see that language in any of the things that they're claiming to criticize. And it comes down to the fact that for these people, the extent of their political outreach, quote unquote, to anyone outside of their, you know, elite social group is just empathy. It's right. Empathy for an approved subaltern, in their case, minorities. Right. Like, they are good people because they empathize with minorities.
It's fucking paternalism.
But that's all they do. All they do is empathize. That is the extent of their involvement. And so when they see somebody saying, hey, what about all these working class people, many of whom are white, they immediately put it in the language, oh, you want to empathize with them? Those people are racist. Because that's all they can process politics as, is empathy with a group. Not changing anything, just showy, performative empathy.
Well, and it's moral means testing, too, because if these people if they don't meet your level of wokeness, they're somehow undeserving or whatever. But I'm sorry, like, I come from the white working class. There's some backward fucking ideas there. I don't remember a redneck passing something like stop and frisk, but for some reason, like, we're taking the fucking fall for, like, the fucking political racism that dominates this country. But, like, you know, we don't actually, we're self-interested, for fuck's sake. It's our dominant ideology is not racism.
I want to say something for a minute. They're talking like Hillary Clinton ran this campaign where she got the same proportion of black votes that Obama got.
Yeah.
And Latino votes.
Yeah, let's get into this.
Which she fucking didn't. She got like millions fewer black votes, to the point where like she would have won the Rust Belt otherwise. Because you know what? She didn't run any type of campaign where she was reaching out to any type of person.
No.
Except for like white Republican suburbans. So if you're going to lecture me about how we need to go in this Hillary Clinton direction of the party, which didn't actually happen, and you lost because of it, and you put Michael fucking Bloomberg on stage, this stop and frisk fucking billionaire cocksucker.
Oh, you know, he's just a good old boy. He's one of those rural American working class racists. Michael fucking Bloomberg.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it's ridiculous. Felix is onto something here, because it's like, I've been looking at some of these. You know, you can look at exit polls. Everyone thinks exit polls are kind of shit anyway. But if you look at the local, county, precinct, neighborhood level stuff, you know, it looks a lot like, you know, we can't be sure yet, but it looks a lot like black voters, surprise, surprise, are responded differently based on class. So PG County, the richest African-American majority county.
You mean black people aren't a hive mind?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
In America, voted for Clinton at about the numbers are almost identical as the numbers with Obama. You know, the proportion and the total number of votes. But if you look at, you know, West Philadelphia, if you look at Detroit, if you look at rural Mississippi, all over the place, if you look at poorer and working class, because black people are part of the working class, people didn't turn out, and this is the difference with our country. It's so slanted towards white supremacy, right, that you have one party that's like its main virtue is it's not racist, and so there black people don't have a choice to vote for one party or another party. They have a choice to either vote or not vote. So the black people who chose not to vote were making, I want to say that they were making a choice. Were they not aware that the threat that Donald Trump posed? I mean, I'm not going to psychoanalyze them. The point is, they didn't vote for Hillary Clinton, and she didn't try to win them, and it cost us the fucking country.
Hillary Clinton. Okay, yep. So we talk about like how, you know, that speech Trump made to black people in the campaign, where he's like, "What do you have to lose?" we talk about like how entitled and shitty and tone deaf that was. But really,
it was his best tactic.
What was Clinton's appeal? It was, what else are you going to do? That was literally it.
Well, it was also, remember, like a brief kind of boom with my husband before everything went to horrible shit. Right, there was like a, and people kind of remember like this slight improved period of the 90s and associate it with Bill Clinton.
But her closing ad, I mean, just to talk about the sort of class character of the Clinton campaign, which I think is something that historians are going to have a field day with. Yeah. Her last ad, it's amazing. If you guys have watched it again, it's utterly appalling. It's literally 2 minutes of just her, you know, with her like nice gold necklace and her like nice parlor, you know, kind of like fancy desk, like mahogany desk. And like, she's this like nice rich lady. And all she says is, I'm nice. I work hard. It's my turn. That's literally the sum total of her argument she makes.
Oh my
There's
God.
No footage of any other person. I mean, and you look at that and you watch, if you just watch that ad next to Donald Trump's ad, devoid of context, which is not something anyone should do. But if you're an alien and you watch those two things, Trump's ad has people, it has movement, it has energy. He's talking about democracy, he's talking about corrupt elites. It's ridiculous, and it's appalling given that his whole campaign is a racist con and grift, that he gets to claim these issues, and Hillary Clinton, her response, the supposed party of the people's response is, but I'm a nice lady who doesn't cuss. And that's all she's got.
The slogan was, I'm with her.
I know.
Yeah,
like, I'm following her around like a fucking dog. And then Trump, in his acceptance speech at the RNC, said, she says that you're with her. Well, I say that I'm with you. Sorry, that's just pure ownage. He owned her there completely because that's an insane imperial mindset to have.
And there was all these linguistic fuck-ups like with the Clinton campaign because it was a top-down campaign in that way. It started that way and it ended that way. And I mean, like, okay, you know what I was thinking about the entire, like, last week before the voting day, where I was like, still thought that Clinton would win, but I was like, oh, I don't know, there's some warning signs. I kept thinking about when Trump made that. You know, Trump's, like, usually really fey. He's usually just, like, sticking his hand out all pussy. And
talking
like,
about gold.
Like, he's like, it's beautiful, it's wonderful.
That's
but
why he's so great.
Yeah, but one time he, like, deepens his voice is when he goes, for too long you haven't had a voice. I am your voice! And you're like,
I know,
shit.
It's amazing.
Hillary could and never would say something like that.
This is a theory. This is why I want to get back to what you talked about. Like, it's important we get the right analysis so we get the right prescription. The liberal media was so focused on all of his racism, which it's, yes, obviously is true, that I was on a radio show last week with two Trump voters, and they were referencing speeches I'd never seen. And afterwards, I pulled them up on YouTube. I couldn't believe it. And it confirmed my worst fears, which I first got when I saw that I'm Your Voice saying, he ran as the reactionary right-wing FDR. He ran as, I'm the traitor to my class.
Yeah, that's called National Socialism.
Yeah, it's really creepy. That's what's so scary about it. Yeah. And then, but like, I mean, there's that moment where people are like talking about how, well, you know, all these good elite people hate him. But, you know, there's a famous speech in Roosevelt's second inaugural where he says, you know, talks about the plutocrats and everybody. He says they're unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred. And even this old 1936 recording, you can hear
that's
people
so
go nuts. Yeah. They just go like, ah! I mean, that's what he did, and it's for horrible things. It's not FDR.
I mean, yeah, like let's make it clear. Donald Trump is a fucking cocksucker, racist.
He's a piece of fucking
incompetent.
Shit.
But let's be honest, you were a fucking idiot rube if you voted for him.
Yeah, no, totally. But there's one thing that Nick Mullen has said a lot that like I kept going back to because it's true. Like the stuff he says to people, they think it's cool. Like, it sounds cool to people. Like, I Am Your Voice sounds fucking cool to people.
But it comes back to the fucking hats, dude. Right. It's the fucking hats. He has the Make America Great Again hats. Any black person is going to see that again and be like, excuse me? But, however, the Hillary response hat was America is already great.
Oh, my God.
Any fucking working left
person is
going to be like,
that is genuinely when I thought it was, she might lose.
What the fuck is that shit? Like, no one thinks it's that's at least as an egregiously disgusting statement.
That was the first serious chill I got when I saw that, because that was months ago, and I was like,
it's fine.
Yeah, I was like, wow, who are these people?
But then at the debates, when she switched it up and went with America is great because America is good.
That's
the Clinton gospel.
Right,
I was in a coffee house in New Haven at Yale, and they had look, Amber, you're speaking for your people, I'm speaking for my people. I know these Hillary people. I know them. I grew up with them. I know them like better than any of you. Well, I don't know, East Coast wise I know them as well as any of you. And they had a Bill Clinton quote. Imagine a coffee shop with a Bill Clinton quote like painted painted at the top of the wall, and it said, "Everything that is wrong with America can be fixed with everything that is right with America." And it's like, oh, these twins, and they're America.
They're just like weird, like fortune cookie tautologies.
Well, you know what that is? That's Homer Simpson. Beer, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Which is my campaign slogan, by the way.
That would be a good one. But like going back to this like idea, like what do we do like going forward, or like how should we look at this analysis? And coming back to what we were talking about with this weird language of like empathy and reaching out, and why this is a fucking dead end for liberals, and what I think the real split is now between like liberal Democrats and the left, is that the solution to like a reactionary populism that's sweeping the country, it has to be political, right? Like, politics are how you fix this shit, not messaging or symbolism or representation or anything like that. It has to be a real political program. And like, I think the political program is pretty easy to come up with.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, what would appeal to... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, Amber wants me to read this. Jackman put together...
Doesn't Amber want me to read? I just act like you're, like, moved by the spirit.
I'm sorry.
You people are so not Rust Belt.
I know. This is what's so funny. People think because I write about, like, white working class stuff like this, they think, because all they can think is identity, they think, well, he must be a white working class person. No, I'm not. I'm from a, you know, nice McMansion-y suburb. At a pool. Yeah. That's what they... But here's the thing.
Sarah
Lawrence for an MFA in creative writing.
Writing.
What do you say about
him? You are a queer in Texas.
True.
And you're a bro in New York. What is masculinity on this?
I know. My dad finds it just so fucking funny.
I'm a queer anywhere in America.
But you know where I grew up. Where I grew up, and I grew up not far from where Matt. You know. Fans of the show, Matt Brunig grew up, very different class circumstances. But you know, the only people I knew growing up that were Democrats in my little circle were like the kids that lived in the trailer park, and my grandparents, my dad's parents, who never went to college. So it's like this whole thing is completely skewed. And I was going to read this thing that Jackman put together, a booklet called The ABCs of Socialism, to like, because all these people are like primed up and they want to know these basic things. And this debate we're having stems from a fundamental misunderstanding of like why socialists talk about working class people. I was going to read what Vivek Chibber wrote. It's pretty short, about called Why the Working Class. After all, there are lots of groups who suffer indignities and injustices. Racial minorities, women, the disabled. Why single out workers? Why not just say that every marginal and oppressed group ought to be at the heart of socialist strategy? There are many things that people need to lead decent lives, but two items are absolutely essential. The first is some guarantee of material security, things like having an income, housing, and basic health care. The second is being free of social domination. If you are under someone else's control, if they make many of the key decisions for you, then you are constantly vulnerable to abuse. So, in a society in which most people don't have job security, or have jobs but can't pay their bills, in which they have to submit to other people's control, in which they don't have a voice in how laws and regulations are made, it's impossible to achieve social justice. It follows that the first step to making our society more humane and fair is to reduce the insecurity and material deprivation in so many people's lives.
Connor, I'm going to stop you right there, because what I heard in that quote was, in order to get single-payer health care, we need to repeal the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, I do not. Look, Connor.
Connor, Connor, the way you're throwing trans POC under the bus right now.
Connor,
is...
I cannot believe what you just read us right now, which is saying that we all need to say the N-word at once. Get a higher minimum wage, dude. Get that shit out of there. Yeah.
Chapo's coming out for a J.J. Watt reform enrichment act for all J.J. Watt Americans.
Yeah. By the way, I think that's a good closing note. But before we go out, Matt reminded me I do need to apologize for confusing Herm Edwards and Denny Green on last week's show.
Shame.
Herm Edwards,
well, you're not
was...
a real American, so you wouldn't know that kind of thing.
Well, Herm Edwards' famous angry post-game catchphrase was, "You play to win the game." And Denny Green's was, "The Bears are who we thought
they
were."
We are who they thought they were.
Yeah.
We let him off the hook. And that's what we did. We let Donald Trump off the hook.
Absolutely.
Like, speaking on behalf of, which I hate to say it, but on behalf of a Democratic Party, we let him off.
And it also pisses my error also annoys me, because "you play to win the game" would also be a good thing to yell at the Hillary Clinton campaign.
So just so we all agree, the solution going forward is that Bernie Sanders needs to appeal to insane clown posse fans. I mean, that's
the Juggalo vote could have swung Ohio for
for him. He gets out on stage with some Faygo or whatever it is. We could do it.
I mean, John Kasich
Juggalos for Bernie was a real thing, by the way, during the primaries.
Yeah.
Well, the Juggalo message is more in line with democratic socialism and anti-racism than it
is true.
Anything else.
Yeah.
Well, I think the gathering, I know someone who went and covered the gathering, and she said it was actually like a more racially integrated setting than this Gawker party I just went to.
Oh, totally.
It's actually the gathering of the Juggalos is like Left Forum.
Hey guys,
and Molly Klein speaks at both.
Hey guys, what if this dark carnival we've been talking about was just socialism all along?
Whoa.
Yeah. What? Whoa. All right,
I think fucking redistribution. How does that work?
Can I know for you guys listening at home that every time Amber Lee Frost has said "working class," she has literally pumped her left hip in the air. So just I want everybody to feel how we're going out.
Yeah,
she's and, crazy for this one.
We're now in. By the way, we're now in Chapo Trap House season two. Yeah. I think this is episode one.
Episode one.
Chapo Trap House season two.
Yeah. Well, what are other great season two openers? Like season.
Yo,
oh shit, yeah.
Hold on, I was just thinking this the other day. You know what this is? Like, now that Trump is gonna be president, it's like when Hearst came to town.
Oh wow. Yeah.
Dude, we're fucking Deadwood.
The earth whispers to him.
Hell yeah.
Pretty soon someone's gonna take off my finger with a claw hammer. That's all I gotta say. Alright guys, Matt Karp, Connor Kilpatrick, thanks for joining us.
Peace.
Thanks guys. Thanks.
Cheers everybody.
Rattlesnake, oh rattlesnake, what makes your teeth so white? I've been living in the bottom all my life. I ain't done nothing but fight. Well, I ain't done nothing but fight. A muskrat, oh muskrat, what makes you smell so bad? I've been living in the bottom all my life. I'm mortified in my head. Well, I'm mortified in my head. Groundhog, oh groundhog, what makes your back so brown? It's a wonder I don't smother by from a living down in the ground. Yeah, from a living down in the ground. Rooster, oh rooster, what makes your claws so hard? I've been scratching this gravel all my days. It's a wonder I ain't tired. It's a wonder I ain't tired. A jaybird, oh jaybird, what makes you fly so high? I've been robbing your corn patch all my life. It's a wonder I don't die. It's a wonder I don't die. A rattlesnake, oh rattlesnake, what makes your teeth so white? I've been living in the bottom all my life. I ain't done nothing but bite. Well, I ain't done nothing but bite, yes. I ain't done nothing but bite. Well, I ain't done nothing but bite, yes.